Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 287.
This week on the podcast, Puerto Rico is the Greece of America. And not because they both have beaches.
Plus, yes, America, Rudy Giuliani is an actual idiot. We weren't lying about that.
And John McCain intends to survive just long enough to get one final Trump diss in. Even if that means meticulously planning his own funeral.
Plus, Trump's unending love for contentious confirmation hearings led him to beg and plead with torture lover Gina Haspel not to withdraw her own nomination.
And Melania is finally announcing that her official platform is to have a platform.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Maybe one day you'll find us on social media again.
Oh,
I don't
feel
like we haven't been doing great with that.
I know we haven't.
We're still recording every week, so
yeah.
Just subscribe on iTunes and like,
yeah,
just
and
listen
you're
to
just
the podcast.
Know.
Exactly, you'll know when our next podcast comes out. This week, instead of bringing you just news about Puerto Rico's ongoing blackout situation, we have exciting news of a Puerto Rico general strike that occurred on May Day because things are not going so hot on the economic end there right now. And this is something,
and they weren't before.
This is something we've talked about in the past. But we now have we sort of have an outline of the details of the austerity plan that is about to be imposed on Puerto Rico. And we wanted to go through that a little bit in light of the news that you probably saw that there were violent strikes.
And also just broadly talk again about austerity
yes,
plans.
Yes, exactly.
Because those are never good plans.
As you might recall during our This Is a Coup phase, we're not such big fans of austerity measures.
Not really.
And this is especially frustrating because this is not the international community choosing to do something. This is not like Europe choosing to do something and us chiming in. This is us choosing
like
to
screwing
do
over our own colony, for lack of a better
word.
Well,
that's what it is.
That's what it is.
I mean, as you'll hear as we go through these austerity measures. Yeah. So in any case, on May Day, happy May Day, everyone, by the way. Puerto Rico had a big general strike, and things got violent when riot police showed up and started spraying protesters with tear gas.
Riot police will often
escalate a situation.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The news made it all look like chaos and also didn't do a great job of explaining why these protests were happening. Basically, so already there's the issues with the slow recovery from Hurricane Maria, but there has also been a sort of added layer of chaos because of this new austerity plan that's about to go into effect. So while the governor was criticizing the protesters by saying they were vandals and that, you know, they were damaging the good name of Puerto Rico, which at the moment doesn't have much of a good name because of all the chaos we've caused over there. There's sort of a third entity in the battle that doesn't get along with either the protesters slash citizens of Puerto Rico nor the government, which is that they... So back in 2016, while Puerto Rico was in the middle of their debt crisis, Congress created a financial oversight board. In Puerto Rico, they call it La Junta, which a junta is like a like a military takeover, you know? It's like a dictatorship.
Yeah.
And neither residents nor the government really get along with La Junta. And so...
Shocking.
But they passed a plan in mid-April that was supposed to kind of help Puerto Rico get out of its debt crisis. And as part of this plan, you may not be shocked to hear, there are pretty severe austerity measures.
Yeah.
And by the way, like, they have all these creditors in part because of policies we on the mainland have instituted over there. They're in billions of dollars of debt over tax breaks that we insisted on having so that it would be cheap to make stuff over there. I mean, these are things that in any other sort of civilized society, we would agree that their debt is really our debt and belongs to all of us because they haven't been given the same representation as us in order to sort of make this debt really be their own.
Yeah.
So in any case, they've already been having a hard time recovering from Hurricane Maria. They are still not at 100% over in Puerto Rico. And then now we're sort of instituting policies like you might, like a backwater colony that you really don't care about the citizens of.
Yeah.
And so we talked about a lot of similar measures during the whole Greece austerity measure conversation in the EU. But this is really essentially exactly what we're dealing with here now in Puerto Rico. Basically, this plan, it takes steps to eliminate work in informal markets like street vending and stuff like that and try to push people towards mostly toward the tourist sector. Which is their biggest kind of moneymaker over there. Their biggest industry at the moment because we screwed, you know, they had an industry situation that we then let disappear. But these are service sector jobs where people are not going to have the benefits that you might associate with formal work arrangements versus informal work arrangements.
Sure.
So the reason you want to decrease informal work is because it doesn't provide any social protections, it doesn't provide any structure, you know, you don't get benefits with it. But if you're getting rid of all of the benefits anyway, pushing people towards service jobs in the tourist sector isn't really improving their quality of life.
No.
Because the plan slashes a bunch of mandated employee benefits in Puerto Rico, and that includes sick leave, that includes vacation pay. They have a mandatory Christmas bonus in Puerto Rico, and it eliminates that. To offset some of those losses, it's increasing the minimum wage for workers over 25 by 25 cents an hour.
Oh, well, that's going to solve all of their...
Even in a developing economy, that's a meaningless sum of money.
Yeah.
And they say that if enough people enter the workforce, they could ratchet it up. But that's not much.
Yeah.
That's to take away people's ability to sort of make a living informally on their own.
Yes.
And then be like, well, we're giving you 25 cents an hour.
Yeah.
I want to remind everyone that that's a dollar every 4 hours before taxes.
Yes.
Just so that we're clear on what kind of money we're talking about. Yeah. They still use American dollars in Puerto Rico, as you might recall, because they're an American territory.
Yeah.
So they're going to implement an earned income tax credit also to offset this. But we have that here. And one thing that is true about it is it doesn't apply to everyone.
Right.
And it often doesn't apply to people who need it. So it's not a foolproof way of offsetting the cost of all of this.
And it's also just, it's so... Especially in Puerto Rico now, which has so much work to be done from Maria, it just it seems
there is so much public sector work that needs to be
that's
done.
That's what is.
Why aren't we hiring people?
That is what's confusing to me. Like there are, look, we don't like austerity measures. We didn't think that they worked
anywhere
in Greece
in history.
Or anywhere in history.
In Italy, in Spain.
But this is such a clear to me, like there is a.
It's a clear fuck you.
There's a, there's a clear way to, like, get these people back to work and get them living wages and, like,
and, instead,
and fix, and get the country
moving
to fix the power grid, to, you know, to expand other industries, to work on, you know, roads and bridges and, like,
if there is one thing,
we just don't want to spend the money because we don't care. And that's, that's truly the only reason. There can be no other reason.
If there is one plan that has proven to work in debt economic crises like this in the past, if there is one thing that has helped us rescue ourselves from recessions, it's public investment.
Right. Exactly.
And it's
and here
the government hiring people.
There's like clear things to invest in. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there always are in America too, because you know, our roads and bridges and airports and everything else are crumbling you know,
as
always
much as everyone
at
else.
Every turn. Just as, right, exactly. But I mean, like, they are still recovering from a hurricane. Like, send some money down there for jobs to
fix stuff. Well, and to add insult to injury, this plan also creates a work requirement for their food assistant program and cuts public employee pensions. So
it
takes money out of the pockets of the people that need it the most,
right,
which
fucks
is
the people over.
Older people on fixed incomes and poor people who can't afford food, and tells them, well, we're giving you an earned income tax credit and 25 cents an hour to work in the private sector because... The other thing that they're doing is privatizing their public utility company. And listen, I get that they had a shit show over there. It's a corrupt nonsense company and it needs to be reworked.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But using a debt crisis to privatize public services is always what happens in these situations. And it always ends up being more expensive for everyone. And it always ends up that not everyone ends up getting benefits out of it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when you privatize a public service that is needed by everyone, that company is suddenly entitled to make decisions about who deserves the service or who's the best customer for them versus providing
it
to everyone because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So they want, you know, the one sort of medium okay thing they want to do is expand renewable energy sources. But if they're doing that privately, then we're not guaranteed to see that benefit most of the people of Puerto Rico who are right now facing a jobs crisis, facing an economic crisis. This is not a nation filled with tons of wealthy people who are going to be able to pay for privatized utilities.
Yeah.
It's also cutting funding to their university. And to individual municipalities there, the reductions are going to be offset by raising tuition. So it's going to decrease access to to higher education there and also lower education because they've closed almost 200 schools and they're about to close another 280. We're not talking about an island of trillions of people.
That's 500 schools.
Yeah, that's 500 schools on the tiny island of Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem sufficient.
Yeah.
But also they're cutting benefits to teachers and professors. They're making it so that people who are going to get less benefit out of going to university because there's no social safety net for anyone, there's no benefits anymore. Yep. So,
and they're doubling the cost of a credit at the university as well.
Yeah, they're doubling the tuition.
Anyway.
So in any case, it shouldn't surprise you that there's major opposition amongst the people to this plan.
You think?
Because it's a bunch of bullshit. And we should remind you once again, although I think I've already said it, Puerto Rico doesn't have a representative in Congress who can vote on this. They like... They send a non-voting representative to Congress.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's they're like
no,
D.C. They don't get to vote on this.
Yeah.
They just get to speak about it, and they're one representative amidst, you know, 500 people that are in there. Like, this is not a choice that they are getting to make for themselves in any way, and that is why even the Puerto Rican government is pretty pissed off about it. Even though the people in Puerto Rico are pissed off at the government in Puerto Rico is pissed off at this plan. So is every, you know, like it's a complicated situation because everyone's so angry at everyone. But in any case, there's a major coalition of unions and other people that is in opposition to this plan. That includes the union that represents most of the utility workers.
Yeah.
A lot of whom have lost their jobs. There have been massive layoffs at PREPA, which is crazy because they don't have any fucking power there.
Right.
In any case, even some members of this board have expressed some reservations, but I think the one who was sort of the most vocal recently faced a political ouster and is no longer there. Rosello, the governor there, wants to release his own fiscal plan because he wants to try to eliminate some of these pension cuts, because that is really a big voting issue for him.
Yeah.
And the board has already said it will fight his government's plan in court if they need to, so they can implement their original plan. So this is colony style. Like, these are not the actions of a democratic society.
No.
These are the actions of an authoritarian government who installed a literal junta in a colony that we own where we don't care about the people. And it's frustrating because this is not going to work for us either. Austerity programs don't work for anyone on any level, aside from a few really rich people who make a lot of money on privatizing things like utilities and other public sector stuff.
Yep.
But this doesn't ultimately create any wealth. So the economy does not get moving in a way that is meaningful.
Yeah.
It gets moving. Some of the economic indicators improve because rich people start making money again. And a lot of economic indicators we've discussed at length on this podcast are complete BS.
Yep.
You know, when we talk about GDP, that doesn't mean that our quality of life has gotten better.
No.
It might mean that rich people got richer. It might mean that poor people got richer. It doesn't have a qualifier. It's just it's just about the general output of the economy.
Yes.
All of that output could be going to one guy.
Right. So, and that is what's happening, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So this is not a way to create a sustainable solution in Puerto Rico. It's only going to make things worse for the vast majority of people there. It's only going to increase the already dramatic income inequality that they're facing.
Yep.
And it's going to increase the levels of poverty that we are not going to have any social support to help, you know, mitigate.
Right.
So who benefits here? It's literally like three guys that benefit. Congress doesn't even benefit because this is going to be a pain in our ass for decades now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, like the other thing here with having a colony, a thing that Spain learned, that we've learned, everyone's learned this who's been a colonizer. It becomes a huge pain in the ass if you piss off the colony too much.
Yes.
Because then they're just all up in your business being like, stop it, guy.
Yeah.
And then they either decide that they're their own country and you lose the colony and any economic benefit of having it is no longer there. Plus, you've invested all this money in it.
Yeah.
Or they end up having a bloody revolution with you and you also may have to give them the rights that they wanted anyway.
Right, exactly.
Or you spend the rest of your life having to fucking pay for National Guardsmen to go quell riots there instead of solving the actual problems that are causing the riots.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just never a good idea.
No.
But so in any case,
that's what's happening in Puerto Rico.
And that's what's happening in Puerto Rico. And this is something, by the way, that because this was an action caused by Congress, you can call your reps about this.
Oh, yeah.
It was your reps that did this. It wasn't their reps. They don't have any reps. Their reps are meaningless.
Right.
It was your reps that did this. So it is okay to call your own reps while you're in Kansas and be like, you got to do something about Puerto Rico that's not just fuck everyone over all the way.
Right. Yes.
That's, we have to have one better plan than that.
Yeah.
In any case. Moving on to the highlight of the week.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Rudy Giuliani is back and better than ever.
This is so good. And I have been living for this so hard this
I
week.
Have had to, at this point, sort of create an actual rule in my life where I just, like, cannot tolerate people telling me that they ever liked Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
I have, like, shut down meetings over it. I have just sort of, like, I'm, like, basically making people sign loyalty oaths to me telling me that Rudy Giuliani's an
asshole.
Was
always terrible.
And was always terrible. I don't want to hear one word about how great he was.
Right.
I have one quick story to tell before we dive in, which is that the reminder that I want to share with everyone in America about Rudy Giuliani is that he put all of the emergency service command centers in New York in the World Trade Center right. before 9/11.
Right.
If you're wondering why chaos resulted, it's in part because the command center that we had planned to run an emergency response like this out of was also destroyed in the attacks.
Yeah.
That's why you don't put your emergency command center in the one terrorist target.
Right. I was going to say, and that's an important fact, too, because it's not as if the World Trade Center had been bombed
right.
prior to that.
There had already been terrorist before. Attacks.
So it was not clear. It's not as if it was a shock that, you know, that would be a place that someone would attack.
Put the command center in fucking Queens.
Sure.
Like a person with a brain.
Put it underground. It's just like
literally put it anywhere else. Don't put it on the 7th floor of the World Trade Center.
God.
Anyway, moving on. He's still an idiot, and now we're about to tell you why.
Oh, so he has. So he's on the Trump legal team.
Yeah. As you might recall.
As you might recall. Yes. And he just thought that he got up to speed this week, apparently, because he decided to do a bunch of TV interviews. Turns out he was far from up to speed and remains not up to speed.
I think the only quality of doing a job that the Trump legal team probably has to fulfill is being on television. I don't think that there's like any requirement that they actually be up to speed on the law.
No.
They just have to be making appearances so that Trump is like, that guy's working.
Well, I know. Well, and we'll get to this in a little bit, but I think when Trump ultimately threw him under the bus later in the week, we're going to do sort of like a chronological order here. But
it's important you get the
But he said something to the effect of like, Rudy's a good guy and he know. And what's important is he knows this is a witch hunt.
Right.
So it's like, that really is sort of like all that Trump needs from these guys. If we're like, if they can successfully say witch hunt on television,
then he's all set.
Then he's good to go.
Because he doesn't know the rest of it, he doesn't understand.
No, he doesn't understand. Anyway, so he started this week on, I believe it was on Thursday. No, it was on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's been a long week.
He went on Hannity. Also, a lot of these were on very friendly places that, you know. I'm surprised, but here's the thing. Those people were idiots, too, because I was about to say I'm surprised Sean Hannity didn't sort of, like, get him to say the right
thing. No one's surprised about that.
But nobody knows.
Right.
Yeah. Jeanine Pirro, she doesn't know either.
No.
Nobody in the next few bits of this podcast are knowers.
No. Yeah, this is a story, a long chronology of a full week of non-knowers communicating with each other on television.
That's
true. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So it begins with his first interview.
Yeah.
Where he said, sort of creates an alternate story about the firing of James Comey.
Yeah.
He That's said right. that Comey was fired because he would not, among other things, say that Trump wasn't a target of the investigation.
Yeah.
And so
now this is about the 100th different story that the administration has
they
had.
They don't know why they fired
because
James
remember,
Comey.
Because remember, and we always thought this was hilarious and knew it wasn't true, was that the official reason that they Rosenstein gave for the firing was that because of how terribly he handled the Hillary Clinton email crisis.
Yeah. I do recall that.
So that was the official reason. So this is we've long since moved past that. But because Trump himself got into a little bit of trouble during an interview with Lester Holt not long after the firing, where he said that it was basically because of the Russia investigation, like at large, like he didn't think that like it was basically just like the Democrats who were mad that they lost an election, so they needed to have this, you know, this Russia investigation. But he never said that it was because
about him.
He never said it wasn't because Comey wouldn't say that he was the target of an investigation or wouldn't say that he was the target of an investigation. And if that is actually why he fired Comey, because Comey wouldn't tell him that he wasn't being investigated, that sounds awful obstruction of justice-y to me.
Yeah, that's firing somebody because you suspect you might be under investigation for the thing that they're responsible for.
Correct.
That is the definition.
Yeah, so that wasn't great. But the real problem that he got into, because this sort of like became the rest of the week long problem that
thing.
Led
this
even
is,
into today.
This is going to be the thing.
This is going to be the thing, which is amazing.
I know.
I love
it's
it.
The best.
Payment to a porn star is really what's going to do it. And it should be. You know what? Because
that's appropriate. That's
what's
Trump.
Fitting of
that's
this presidency.
Trump. Yeah.
Anyway, so he claimed that Trump himself had paid back the $130,000 to Michael Cohen, which has never been said before. That was new information because Trump has always claimed that he had no knowledge of the payment to Daniels at all. didn't know that Cohen did it. He has directed, like, when he has been asked about it, he says, you'll have to ask Michael Cohen. Like, he's always put this on Cohen. Cohen did this. I didn't know.
And the story, the official story has always been like, this is his personal money that he does whatever he wants with, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Giuliani gave, like, three interviews that said this that day.
Exactly.
So, because he also talked to Washington Post and Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. He sort of tweaked his story, at a certain point where he said that he didn't know, Trump didn't know about it at the time, so it couldn't have been a campaign related because, like, it wasn't a crime and it was all funneled through his law firm. But that also doesn't sound any better if it's being like funneled through his law firm, like if he's paying him back sort of like on back channels. Like, that's not
and
better.
And then at the end of the day, Giuliani said that Trump had approved all his comments.
Yes. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're good. I was supposed to say that.
Yeah. They sent me out there to
say
that.
Those are the facts, man.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Except they weren't the facts the about 12 hours later when he went to Fox and Friends. Most of this was
happening
Friendly
fire
Fox.
Again.
Yeah, exactly. Where he tried to clean up everything from the night before and only just further stepped in it because he attempted to clarify the whole payment to Daniels. But he basically argued that. He tried to say that it wasn't campaign related, and he sort of almost had a plausible reason, sort of. He said, if we had to defend this as being not a campaign contribution, I think we could do that. This is for personal reasons. The president has been hurt personally, not politically, personally so much, and the first lady by some of the false allegations. That one more false allegation, 6 years old, I think Cohen was just trying to help the family. For that, he's treated like some kind of villain. So, but then in a classic, in a classic move of not knowing when to shut your mouth, which is a problem of his and everyone, basically,
the whole diary of the mouth.
Went on and said, imagine if that had come out on October 15th, 2016, in the middle of the last debate with Hillary Clinton. Cohen made it go away. He did his job.
Oh, so it is political.
And now all of a sudden we're back to it being a campaign contribution, basically.
Yeah. And also, by the way, the person who clarified all of this for America was inexplicably Kellyanne Conway's husband, George Conway,
who has been sort of
like trolling
half trolling people on Twitter. Yeah. He tweeted a screenshot of campaign finance law because
about campaign gifts, because this would qualify as a gift. It was not a direct contribution to the campaign, but there is such a thing as a campaign gift. And this, being that it was money, has a clear monetary value.
Yeah, exactly. And they have tried to talk their way around the fact that this was just a personal issue, and also the fact that Trump paid it back not with campaign money means that it wasn't campaign related.
But if it was meant to benefit the campaign,
then
he
matter.
Made a contribution to his campaign.
And that is where now we're going to take a brief respite from the Giuliani disaster tour.
Because Trump went on one himself.
And head into the Trump Twitter disaster tour. Because at the same time, basically, on the next morning that Giuliani is on Fox and Friends, Trump has taken to Twitter, where he also made it worse for himself. Yeah. So everybody is just choosing all of the wrong things to do.
They've all
decided
to contradict each other and say things that incriminate them.
Yeah, so he sent three tweets that were one tweet in succession that had to be broken up. Anyway, so he says, he starts with, Mr. Cohen, an attorney, received a monthly retainer, not from the campaign and having nothing to do with the campaign, from which he entered into, through reimbursement, a private contract between two parties, known as a non-disclosure agreement, or NDA.
Trump is a legal expert now, by
the way. Yeah, I know. That sounds like legalese.
A private contract.
In the sense that it sort of doesn't make sense. But it's actually, when you dig into it, it only doesn't make sense just because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
It's not because we don't have the legal knowledge to understand it.
It turns out anyone who speaks English could tell that makes
sense. Yeah, and this is problematic for a few reasons. First, it's problematic because he acknowledged that Cohen was reimbursed, which is the first time that he has ever done this.
Yeah.
He's
always pretended he doesn't know what anyone's talking about.
He has always said all along that he didn't know and has directed any knowledge about the payment or any questions about the payment to Cohen himself. And he didn't know. And Cohen also himself has said multiple times that he himself was never reimbursed.
Right. He took out a home equity loan. He paid this off personally. Now, obviously, to a common sense thinker, that has always sounded insane.
Yeah.
There's no way he was just personally paying off $130,000 for a client just out of friendship.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But that's what he's always claimed he was doing. Yeah. And the other problem is that you can't use a retainer to do payoffs.
No,
the retainer is for Michael Cohen's services.
Right, it's not for legal services.
Yeah, it's for the job that Cohen is doing. Yeah. Any additional expenses are not part of the retainer. You don't pay a retainer to a lawyer so that they can pay off money for you. That's right. Just not what a retainer
is. That's not a legal retainer.
If I was retaining Brent's services as a promo writer, you know, for the next week, I would be paying him to write promos. I wouldn't be paying Brent to, you know, pay off my enemies.
Yeah. And like, if part of my job as a promo writer was going to pay somebody some hush money for maybe a better idea that they might have had that I don't want to get out.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be using that retaining money for that payment that I paid to the other.
You would invoice me for that payment.
That's a separate
expense.
Not part of the retainer.
No.
Yeah.
You're only retained for the services that you provide.
That's right.
And anything else is then billed on top. If we know anything in Hollywood, it's that you bill on top of the retainer for any additional expense.
Exactly.
We're not fools.
Yeah, no. Anyway, and also, hilariously,
another problem with this.
Giuliani had said that Cohen had only started working on retainer in 2017, which was months after the payment to Daniels ever happened. So even if this retainer nonsense story made a lick of sense, which it doesn't, it also, the timeline is off.
I love that he added that additional screw into it.
Yeah.
Like that was, I was saying to Brent as I was reading through everything, that there were all these details to the story that I, in following the story all week, just hadn't even caught because there were so many fuck-ups. And that was one where I was like, wait a minute. He also screwed up the timeline of their whole excuse.
Yeah. So that's only the first tweet, by the way. We've got two more tweets to go through. Anyway, so the second one, there's only a part of this which is like problematic, but we'll just read it because any Trump tweet is a joy to read usually. He said remind you. That's where we last left off on tweet. The tweet was him explaining a non-disclosure agreement. He said, these agreements are very common among celebrities and people of wealth. Of which I am both.
Right.
He didn't say that, but I'm surprised.
But that was by implication.
Probably ran out of characters. Yeah. Anyway, in this case, it is in full force and effect and will be used in arbitration for damages against Ms. Clifford. The agreement was used to stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her about an affair.
Nope.
And the real issue here doesn't have anything to do with the payments, actually, at this point. What it has to do with is that Daniels has been, you know, she's got this lawsuit with Michael Cohen, sort of like over this payment, but she's also, she has sued Trump for defamation.
Right.
And that case, most people have always thought was a little dicey because there hasn't been any sort of like, you haven't seen Trump himself out trashing Stormy Daniels.
Right, because he's trying to pretend he's never heard of her.
Right, exactly. So, but now we have a tweet that is calling her an extortionist.
Yeah, he's literally defaming her in this tweet.
So Trump just defamed her in this tweet.
Yeah.
So he basically gave the defamation case a reason to go forward because it probably like just wasn't even going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Michael Avenatti was super into that tweet.
Oh, he was killing it this week for everything.
Yeah. He's a man who can be trusted to get in front of a television camera and say what he's supposed to be saying.
Well, and unlike Michael Cohen, he is a man who went to, like, a real law school.
Yeah, Michael Cohen, we also found out this
week, went to the worst law school in America,
literally.
It is the lowest-ranked law school. A fact-based assessment of law schools has led people to the assumption, to the information.
And also, he's the only one on the Trump legal team doing anything right this week.
I know.
By just mostly staying quiet.
Keeping his trap
shut. And potentially
shut.
Flipping. We'll get to that in a second as well.
Yes, exactly. Third tweet. We're on a roll.
Yeah. Despite already having signed a detailed letter admitting there was no affair,
This is a continuation from his last one.
Prior to its violation by Ms. Clifford and her attorney, this was a private agreement. Money from the campaign or campaign contributions played no role in this transaction.
Role was misspelled.
Right, exactly. Problematic for a few reasons. Daniels signed a non-disclosure agreement in 2016. She did not
deny that they had an affair.
Right. She did not admit to, she did ultimately, but in 2018, and that was after the whole thing where she claims that she was
harassed by the
harassed. Yeah. Right, exactly. So that is just inaccurate, which isn't necessarily problematic.
Also, this isn't what an NDA does.
Stupid, but that's not what an NDA does.
An NDA
does,
just says you won't talk about a thing that
talk about
in fact, you don't need to
sign an NDA if nothing happens. Or you don't know a person.
Right. If Brent...
Like, he's never asked me to sign an NDA.
Well, I was going to say, if Brent asked me to sign an NDA over, like, him, you know, because he murdered me, Like, we wouldn't have to sign an NDA because it hasn't happened. Like, there's no, like, you don't have to sign an NDA for an event that never occurred. Because right. You can't talk about an event that never occurred. It didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't think to do that.
But also, this shows where they're into problems legally here. Because this story has always been hilarious.
Yes.
But where they're getting themselves into trouble is not knowing the law, which is what you want your lawyers to do.
It's the only reason you hire them.
That's the only reason you hire them. But, you know, Giuliani has shown a misunderstanding of it. But now also Trump is showing a misunderstanding of it, too. Because when he talks about money, when he says money from the campaign or campaign contributions played no role in this transaction, role spelled incorrectly, that does not matter.
No.
It doesn't matter whether he reimbursed it. It doesn't matter whether it came from his personal money. It doesn't matter whether he did or did not pay Michael Cohen back. It matters if that money was paid to help the campaign.
Right. And
it doesn't matter whether it was donor money. It doesn't matter. If this was done to silence her prior to an election, which clearly it was because it was in October of 2016.
Exactly.
Then it doesn't matter because it was a gift to the campaign and it was over $2,700, which is what you're allowed to give a campaign.
Exactly. Yeah. And was never declared.
And it was, and that's the other thing too. Even if
you are allowed to contribute as much personal money as you want towards your campaign, but you have to declare it.
Right.
So if Trump is trying to claim this was a personal gift to his campaign, he's still in violation of
the law. Right, exactly. And they obviously never filed it with the FEC because they've been claiming the whole time that they didn't know that it existed.
Exactly. By the way, Brent and I should not be better at campaign finance law than the legal team.
No, we can't be.
Blaming the legal team representing the president.
We
literally are.
But
we shouldn't know more about campaign finance law than the lawyer. Like, this is where I want to remind everyone that lawyers are not all things to all people. Lawyers have specialties.
Right.
Don't hire a lawyer who's not an expert in campaign finance law to protect you in a case that's about campaign finance law.
That's right.
The first.
Don't hire Rudy Giuliani for anything.
Right. First of all,
Don't have Michael Cohen, even if he's your fixer. I mean, he's just basically like a shady guy who has a cab company in New York or something, which he's also being investigated
for. He's literally a fixer, though. He's not really a lawyer
He doesn't know things.
No, he's not a lawyer.
He's
not a law knower. Exactly. Yeah. And then, puts out, cease and desist letters.
Yeah, that's it.
But
that's all he does.
This is a situation where instead of looking for television personalities to represent you, what you should be looking for is an expert in the field.
That's right.
Don't hire a lawyer who's not an expert in the field to represent. Lawyers don't know all the law all the time.
No.
Some lawyers are patent attorneys. Some lawyers are real estate lawyers. Some lawyers are litigators. Some lawyers specialize in, protecting.
Entertainment law.
Exactly. Celebrities from nonsense. There are a lot of different kinds of lawyers.
Yeah.
And not all of them are all lawyers. They're not every man.
Right. Exactly.
Lawyers.
Yeah.
Any case.
Okay. So that was Trump's Twitter disaster tour. Now we're back
to Giuliani's.
Yeah. So he did an interview with the Washington Post where the hilarious thing is that he's just always trying to sort of clarify a previous statement. And the fact that he can't figure out how to clarify the statement
makes him the worst lawyer on earth.
Right, exactly. Because it's sort of he should have gone on Hannity. Well, he should have had it right on Hannity. But after the initial fuck up on Hannity, he should have quickly taken 10 minutes to figure out what the right answer was.
A quick thought process.
Right. But he never got there.
No, he's been on a weird sort of kamikaze tour of the media without spending 10 minutes in a thought process.
Yeah, exactly. So he told the Washington Post, he said, I don't know if Trump distinguished it, meaning this payment.
His payment.
Yeah. From other things Cohen might have done for him during the campaign. I don't know that he distinguished it from other expenses that Cohen had for which he had to be reimbursed. So this goes against what Trump had just said, that it was paid for out of the retainer.
Right, because as we just explained with retainers, you invoice for additional expenses on top of the retainer.
Exactly. And he also, by acknowledging that Trump lumped this expense together with other explicitly campaign-related expenses that he was paying Cohen for, it now, again, in a different way, becomes a campaign expense.
It also makes it sound like there's a million women that they paid off, just sort of casually. And we're going to talk about that in a second, too, because they stepped in that further later in the week.
Yeah. He also, in the same interview, appeared to insinuate that Trump actually knew about the payment at the time or was asked about it by Cohen, but then forgot because he was super busy because the election was weeks away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he did actually know.
Yeah,
he just forgot.
That's another version of the story that we had not yet heard. Remember when he just made it up at the time.
Remember when Trump didn't know? Back in those simpler times?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that was much simpler for Trump before he hired Rudy Giuliani.
It always is, by the way, you guys. It's always simpler before you hire Giuliani.
Yeah, exactly.
If you learn nothing else from this story, let it be that.
And the thing that I said to you before I had even heard that Donnie Deutsch was speaking directly to Michael Cohen, which is the next part of the story that we're going to tell you, is that I said, I was like, there's two problems to Giuliani not knowing anything. And it's just one, broadly not knowing anything is problematic when you're the lawyer and you need to be
a
knower
of
things.
Yeah, right.
Right. But the other problem is that there has already been all of this sort of like angst in Trump world about whether Michael Cohen is going to flip or not. Because as we know, his apartment has just, or his offices office. Have just been raided.
And all of and his like, close friends said he would flip, definitely.
And he's in both civil and criminal trials right now.
Yeah.
So
for personal things, for things related to this.
For personal things related to the campaign, everything. Yeah.
He's screwed in many directions.
The New York district attorney, I think, is coming after him, right? Or the New York state's attorney.
I think Schneiderman is after him, right?
Yeah.
Schneiderman's after everyone involved in the story, by the way.
Sure. So they're worried that he's going to spill the beans.
They're worried because he's definitely going to.
Yeah. Well, right. Exactly. But don't piss him off by making him sound like he was just like a shady character in this whole thing just because you don't have your facts straight.
And that's what Donnie Deutsch did.
And that's what, right. Yeah. So Donnie Deutsch,
who by the way, is nobody. I mean, why is he involved in this story?
But
he's a pundit.
Right. He's a pundit. And also, of course, Donnie Deutsch knows both Donald Trump and Michael Cohen.
They're the same genre of people.
Right. Exactly. Right. So Donnie Deutsch calls up Michael Cohen and is like, hey, what are you thinking here? Turns out Michael Cohen isn't loving Rudy Giuliani's not knowing any of the facts.
Are
on
you
television.
Serious?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. He said, Donnie Deutsch said, I spoke with Michael Cohen yesterday, and his comment about Giuliani was that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He also said, look, there are two people that know exactly what happened, myself and the president, and you'll be hearing my side of the story. Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun. And he also said that he was, quote, very frustrated with Giuliani's recent interviews.
What
Although
a surprise.
This is only Friday. Giuliani has yet to appear on Jeanine Pirro or George Stephanopoulos.
There's so
this
much
morning,
more to go.
Which we're halfway done here.
We're just up to Friday.
We've only done Wednesday and Thursday.
Right. Trump tries to do some damage control by clarifying everything just by throwing Giuliani on.
I was kidding. He clarifies nothing.
Right.
So when they asked him to clarify it,
this is what he says about Giuliani. He started yesterday. He'll get his facts straight. Virtually everything that's been said has been said incorrectly.
This is your apparently lead attorney.
And then he also got mad at a reporter because they asked about why he changed his story about the Daniels payment. And he just denied he had done it, basically.
That's right.
He said, I didn't change any story. I'm telling you, this country is growing so fast. And to be bringing up this kind of crap and witch hunt all the time, that's all you want to talk about. When Rudy made the statement, he had just started and wasn't totally familiar with everything. And Rudy, we love Rudy. He's a special guy. What he really understands is that this is a witch hunt.
That's it.
That's all he understands.
Yeah.
He clearly doesn't have a grasp of any other fact.
Things
got better.
Yeah, things got better.
If you can imagine.
Yeah, so Giuliani does an interview with NBC. He's done an interview with every news outlet at this point, basically.
Throwing him in front of new cameras to further complicate story.
Yeah. And this is the best but so far, I think, probably, is that he claims that he was the one who told Trump about the payment.
I like, by the way, that he would then personally implicate himself in the story.
Yeah, that's right.
After all of this, his next step was, you know what? I'm going to get involved. It's not just Trump and Cohen that know what happened, because I'm now one of the original information knowers.
He said, I don't think the president realized he paid him, Cohen, back for that specific thing until we, his legal team, made him aware of the paperwork. He then said that Trump responded to the news by saying, oh my goodness, I guess that's what that's for.
First
meaning
of all,
that payment.
Then he knew about the payment because he remembers the payment.
Yeah.
Because second of all, what? Giuliani just started and this story has been in the news for months.
Yeah.
Giuliani was not who told him about the payment.
Well, Giuliani just told him that, because I think that they were basically going through,
looking for the payment.
Right, exactly. They were going through all of the money that Trump had paid to Cohen, which was clearly not on retainer.
Right.
But even though that's Trump's
story.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And basically Giuliani was like, oh, it was this chunk of money.
Right.
That was the Cohen payment, yeah. Which was apparently revelatory to Trump.
News to Trump. So then after all of this, and Trump throws him under the bus, they just decided nothing Giuliani said in the last 48 hours is true.
Yeah.
Let's forget everything.
He issued a formal statement, Giuliani.
Yeah. Just like saying recanting everything.
Yep. I didn't know anything.
I didn't say anything. forget I opened my mouth.
To every news outlet.
Goes on another television show.
That's right. One day later, on Saturday night, the Jeanine Pirro show.
Oh, always a classic.
And admits to not knowing anything.
Yeah.
He said on camera, he said, the facts, I'm still learning. I've been on the case 2 weeks. I'm not an expert on the facts yet. I'm getting there.
Here's the thing. Brent and I are currently experts on the facts. All of America are experts on the facts.
I saw this story last night because this happened last night. And that's when I texted you. I texted Lila and I was like, how do we have more of the facts than the lead attorney?
Brent has texted me multiple times this week just to complain that Giuliani is an idiot.
Right, I know.
Which I'm living for.
Yeah.
Because believe it, you know? I've known
it. And always have.
And always have.
Right, exactly.
In any case.
Their continued misunderstanding of campaign finance law also came up in this Jeanine Pirro interview because he said the donation would be legal even if it was a campaign donation, according to him, because it was a legal campaign donation because the president reimbursed it fully, which is just
not true. And
this
is where we remind you about what we just said, which is that if it's not filed with the FEC, it's illegal.
That's right.
If Trump paid this out of his personal fortune, then it needed to be filed with the FEC.
Yeah.
If he didn't, then we need to find out why Michael Cohen felt so personally responsible for an affair that Trump had tried to have years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And also in this interview, he kept referring to it as an expenditure, which is the word that the FEC uses to describe expenses related to a campaign. So that's also not
and
great.
And once again,
don't use that word if you're going to describe this $130,000 as an expenditure.
Being a retainer.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, the whole thing. To keep track of what contradicts what is it all contradicts it all.
Yeah.
Maybe that's their plan.
I think they're just trying to confuse the legal process into submission.
But it's not.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
This is not New York City real estate.
They're not smart enough to confuse people that much.
You can do this in New York City developer.
Right? I just figured it all out in about 30 minutes on Lila's couch.
Right. And Brent is not a lawyer.
That's right.
Neither of us have legal backgrounds.
Yeah. Then... Unrelated, he mimicked petting Hillary Clinton as though she was a cat while they
also
were
talking on Jeanine Pirro. Yeah, that's Pirro. Just a side note before we move into his Sunday interview with George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, because they still continue. I love that on Friday he issues a statement saying that he doesn't know anything and he's not up to speed on the facts. And then less than 24 hours later, he's back on television again.
Multiple appearances.
Yeah.
He's killing it. So he's talking to George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah.
Starts by saying that everything's false anyway because he can't even acknowledge that Trump knew Stormy Daniels.
Trump didn't know her anyway, so like, why are we even... This is a witch hunt.
Yeah. Stephanopoulos pointed out that there is photographic evidence that Trump had, in fact, met Stormy Daniels.
Produced photographic evidence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then he was kind of like, never mind, I still don't know anything.
Right. And so that's what he did for the rest of the interview.
Right, which is... Again, why is he on television if he doesn't know anything? If I know more about it than he does, why aren't I on television?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, invite literally any person on the street on television.
Who's been following the news.
They have to know more than Giuliani does about this story.
Invite a news watcher.
Yeah. Even someone who's been tuned only to Fox News for the last 7 days would have more information than Giuliani currently does. In any case, there's one more aspect to this interview. Because they went one deeper on the ABC interview with George Stephanopoulos. Yeah. Obviously, Giuliani has shown an extraordinary understanding of the law up until this point. So you shouldn't be surprised that he's also said that Trump might just not comply with a subpoena if Mueller issued him one to talk to him about the Russian interference. Because apparently he can just invoke the Fifth and choose not to say anything. As the president. You know, he's got special privileges because he can't be convicted of anything as the president or compelled to do anything related to the law. The problem is... It's not clear that that's the case, and it's pretty clear that if he tried to do this, the Supreme Court would have to get involved.
Ooh.
Which would also be amazing, by the way. The showdown between Trump and the conservative Supreme Court would be epic. Because some of them are terrible. Some of them are kind of sticklers for a basic understanding of the law.
The law, right. That's
not, you know, I know we don't agree on the broad strokes with a lot of them,
right.
But there are certain things about the law that I think a lot of us can agree on. Even with the most conservative Supreme Court members.
Right, exactly.
And Trump is the only person who doesn't seem to believe in any of those things.
Right. Yes.
But Giuliani also said during this interview that he wouldn't let him sit with Mueller, even though Trump has said he'd be willing to, because that would be walking him into a prosecution for perjury, which basically means that if he talks to Mueller, he's going to definitely lie.
Right. Yeah.
So basically, Trump is inevitably going to lie on the stand when Mueller does inevitably talk to him, and therefore they can't let him talk to Mueller.
Yeah.
And because he's the president, he doesn't have to.
Right. I mean, whether the whole pleading the fifth and whether the Supreme Court has to get involved, like, that's, I mean, that's, who knows whether
that's speculation.
But, right, speculation. But, like, you know, I will say that him telling him not to sit down with Mueller is probably the best legal advice that he has given him.
Well, I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that he will perjure himself if he does that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, that's the only fact that everyone agrees on in this situation. Exactly. Trump's going to lie on the stand. Right,
exactly.
He lies all the time.
Right, and maybe accidentally because he's an idiot. I think if there's one thing that Giuliani has an understanding of is Trump's
idiocy. When you can get as intimate as having Trump motorboat you while you're dressed in drag, then I think that's an intimate enough relationship to understand that Trump inevitably will lie both on purpose and by accident in almost any situation.
That's right. Yeah.
But again, here, just don't hire an idiot.
Well, and that's the thing, because, like, you know, it's all fun and games
for us.
And for so many people, actually, really, this week has just been a real treat.
Fox News watchers, NBC News watchers, ABC News watchers, like, all the news watchers.
Readers, right. Yeah, exactly. You can't just say that Rudy Giuliani isn't really up to speed on all of the facts, because when you send your attorney out, your attorney is speaking on behalf of you.
Yeah.
So you can't just on Friday be like, oh, well, Rudy didn't know what he was talking about. Rudy is your lawyer and is saying things for you because you hired him to do so.
He's literally speaking on your behalf.
That's right.
So it is
probably because he's on retainer.
Yeah. It is like you're speaking.
Right.
It's the same.
That's what this is.
It's the same thing as you speaking.
Right. That's why you refer questions that you don't want to answer to your attorney.
Right. Because they will tell you. Presumably they understand how to not implicate you.
That's right.
That seems to be something Giuliani can't be trusted to do.
That's right.
And also, they can speak on your behalf because that is literally what you hire them to do.
That's what you're paying them for, right.
They are just representing you. A lawyer represents you. They don't just befriend you. That's not... Right. Apparently, in Trump world, lawyers just befriend you, pay off clients, or pay off, you know, potential scandals on your behalf, and then have no other responsibilities.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's in the world, that's not what a lawyer does.
Yeah.
But also, one more thing about this ABC interview. Giuliani also left open the possibility that Cohen might have doled out other payments of this sort.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, we already know that there's one other woman who's suing Trump.
Yeah.
But we didn't have anyone saying currently until this moment was the agreement with Michael Cohen, as far as I know, is a longstanding agreement that Michael Cohen takes care of situations like this, then gets paid for them sometimes. That sort of implies, so Stephanopoulos asked if that means that he made payments to other women, and Giuliani said, I have no knowledge of that, but I would think if it was necessary, yes. He made payments for the president, or he's conducted business for the president, which means he's had legal fees, money's laid out, and expenditures.
Yeah.
So he's had all the money words.
Yeah.
In any case, I think we all know there are other payments.
Oh.
We don't need to, it's like how we knew about the golden showers. Like,
right,
we know what we know just based on common sense. There's some things that you don't need proof of.
Yeah.
And one of them is that there are other payments. Because there's... you know, what, 17 other women who have accused Trump of sexual harassment in some form?
Right.
There's other payments.
Yeah. Oh, for obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, by the way, has been living for everything, we said.
He's been just given gift after gift after gift.
He said of Giuliani's explanations and then re-explanations, these are facts you would find out as an attorney in the first 30 minutes of meeting a client. This is not that complicated of a situation. Did the president know about the $130,000 payment? When did he know about it? Did he know about the agreement? Did he reimburse it? And how did he reimburse it? I mean, I don't understand what's so complicated about that unless you're trying to hide things.
That's right.
And that's really where we stand here, too.
Yes.
How could this possibly have been that complicated?
Right.
How could Giuliani not have known the facts?
Right.
The facts are the facts.
That's right.
And the facts are pretty straightforward.
Yes, but when the facts that you're presenting are cockamamie stories
that you made
to not say the facts.
Right. It's complicated.
Then that's when it gets complicated. That's right.
We've all been there, you know. Sure. You tell someone you liked their shirt one day and that's you didn't like it, and you have to hold that ruse, keep that ruse going for years.
But you told somebody else that you didn't like it, and then
two of them are together in the room and you're talking about the shirt. All of a sudden, you're fucked.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
That's really what's happened here.
Yeah.
It's office politics gone very wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, moving on from that epic story. We also have some light comedy coming out of the McCain camp.
I know. When you were going back for 2 seconds, when you were like, there wasn't that much news this week. And I was like, we can talk the entire podcast about Rudy Giuliani. Yeah. I guarantee you. And really, we almost just did.
Yeah, exactly. We have some lighter stories about McCain dying coming up. Yeah. John McCain
But it really is a lighter story.
It is a lighter story. McCain is staying maverick straight through, is what he's doing.
In death. I mean, he hasn't died yet.
No, but he's basically on his goodbye tour of America.
Yeah, people are like coming by and paying respects.
He's receiving visitors.
Old friends, basically.
Yeah, he's, you know, at this point survived multiple bouts of plane crashes and cancer. But it seems like this brain tumor might actually do him in.
Yeah.
This is where I want to just point out as a complete side note, he's still younger than Dianne Feinstein.
That's right.
Just saying that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's staying maverick to the end by in receiving visitors, also seeming to have a hand in his own funeral preparation.
Yeah, that's right. He's making the guest list.
He's making the guest list for his funeral. I was wondering if maybe he's just planning to attend.
Right?
Maybe he wants the funeral to happen before. I mean.
Yeah, right? They could memorialize him while he's still alive.
I don't fully believe he's going to die. Right. Five plane crashes is a lot of plane crashes.
Yeah, he's proven himself a non-dier.
He's a survivor. Isn't his mother still alive?
I don't know. I think she might be.
I think she is.
She's
I mean,
180 or something like that.
Yeah, like there's. There are super agers in his family. So this is just my side note. I know he's really sick, and I feel bad for his family that they're going through this, of course.
Yeah.
But I love that he's kept his sense of humor strong straight to the end. Because in the process of helping plan his own funeral, and they're going to have him eulogized by Obama and W, like the whole former president scene, they have also asked that Mike Pence go instead of Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is
literally not invited to McCain's funeral.
Right, and Donald Trump, as we know, doesn't particularly care for John McCain.
No, they hate each other. But you know what he doesn't like even more than John McCain is
being
left
invited
out.
To a party.
Right.
Which this funeral sounds
making
like
the guest list.
Yeah.
This is going to be a who's who of people that are involved in politics.
That's right.
Or things. John McCain is in his 80s. He's been serving a long time. He's survived 5 plane crashes, as I never tire of reminding anyone.
Right. And you know what?
He's got a lot of friends in high places.
I'm not trying to have him.
No, I can fully understand.
Be hanging around me while I'm
can fully understand
dead.
Why he's doing this.
I didn't want you around in life, and I don't want you, certainly don't want you around while I'm trying to enjoy the afterlife.
Right. If there's one thing I've routinely appreciated about John McCain, and there's not been many, it's his sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
John McCain is a guy who likes to play a prank.
Yeah.
He's a guy who doesn't, you know, he's a maverick.
Yeah. This goes back to that, what was it in that Pod Save America thing that we went to where it was like, he's like one part hero and 9 parts troll or something like that. Like this
as
is
his
like,
own campaign staff
is,
said.
Yeah, this is like getting.
This is his 9 parts troll. He's letting out all 9 parts
exactly.
Right now.
Releasing
but
the
I love,
trolls.
When you texted me this story, I was like, oh my God, did I not hear that he died? Like I was immediately like, I missed it. John McCain died.
He's planning this like
he's
as
not
a wedding.
Dead. Yeah, he's planning his own funeral. Is basically what's happening.
Yeah.
And he's getting really melodramatic. He told his son-in-law to take care of Meghan. And like, but in the meantime, his staff is telling everyone that he's, you know, he doesn't like to get sentimental. So don't say goodbye when you come pay your respects.
Yeah.
In any case,
so
I can't love it more.
Yeah.
And I fully, this is one of the political moves. You know, John McCain has his own diplomacy career.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, and you know who has taken over for him since he can't be flying around fixing everything? John Kerry.
Oh, smart.
Because he's trying to secretly save the Iran deal.
Of course.
Because
he's trying not to
baby.
Die in a fiery fire also, probably.
Well, sure.
Like, he's trying to save.
Yeah. But I was just reading that this week. He's, like, basically,
I can't think
like,
of a
holding,
better person.
Like, all of these, like, secret meetings.
He's been the Secretary of State.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know? He's a guy who knows people.
That's right.
Like John McCain, he doesn't particularly have political morals. You know?
No, not at all.
I say he's the perfect replacement.
Yeah, I agree.
In any case, I'm glad someone's doing it because I was a little worried that without McCain, we were totally fucked.
I know. Yeah.
Especially because our current Secretary of State's maybe not ideally who you'd want in that position.
Correct.
And speaking of the cabinet, we have some drama on the CIA end. Remember when Gina Haspel was going to become the next director of the CIA because of her sterling record?
Yeah. She's going to be the first woman CIA runner.
Well, it turns out Congress was not super jazzed about approving her, given her past as someone who is super involved in our, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques program,
yeah, waterboarding.
I.e. waterboarding and other yeah. forms of torture.
Yeah.
So, in any case, she decided, you know what?
And also the fact that she, like, destroyed all of the evidence about right. it, too. Like that.
So that she knew. Yes. She knew it was shitty of her, and she went for it anyway.
Yeah.
In any case, she thought to herself, I don't know. I'm not into it.
Right.
And
she probably saw what just happened to old Ronnie Jackson.
Yeah. And she was like,
you know what?
This.
Maybe this isn't what I'm into right now.
No, exactly. So she asked to have her nomination withdrawn.
Yeah.
And
came as a big surprise.
Shocked everyone in the White House.
Yeah.
Trump has to be the one to withdraw it. So she hasn't been formally withdrawn.
Right.
So currently he's sitting around trying to convince her to stay.
Yeah.
Even though she knows that she wouldn't pass a Senate confirmation hearing. And
right.
that's just awkward for everyone.
Or would have a nasty one.
Yeah. I think it really is going to be.
She might get the votes, but I don't think that she would actually.
I don't think she would. And yeah. I think what happened was someone probably clued her in. On the Senate side. Was
probably
like,
they were like,
you know what,
this is
don't
not
put yourself
good for you.
Through
yeah.
this. You're going to never work again if you do
yeah.
this. But in any case, Trump doesn't seem to want to let her go. So we're in a little bit of a standoff at the moment.
Yeah, well, he loves to send people over to the Senate.
To just destroy them.
Just going to...
Just exactly. decimate their reputations.
Right. Maybe he actually really doesn't like her.
I thought that to myself as well.
Right? I mean... Yeah.
Well,
who knows?
You know.
Yeah.
She's a woman, so he can't like her that much.
No, exactly.
Yeah. In any case, moving to a quick discussion of the primaries.
Yeah, primary season.
Because it's primary season, and it's about to get exciting. We're pretty soon going to release our props guide.
That's right.
So get ready for that if you're in California. If you're not, just enjoy it. We write a funny props guide every year. It has information, and it's funny. So, like, yeah. deal with that. But in any case, Ohio is having its primaries on Tuesday of this week.
Yeah.
And they have a kind of interesting gubernatorial primary happening on the Democratic
yeah.
side. We, I think, have mentioned that Dennis Kucinich entered that race.
I think we have.
But it turns out, so we have our resident UFO-seeing elfin populist.
That's right.
Dennis Kucinich, the original Bernie Sanders of the presidential primary season.
Right.
And he is sort of like on the Bernie train in the sense that his platform, he has a lot of support from some Bernie people. Bernie
yeah.
has not made an endorsement, but
right. Our Revolution.
Our Revolution yeah. has endorsed him. A bunch of key allies from the Sanders campaign in 2016. He's a big supporter of single payer, has been for years.
Yep.
He's the guy with a progressive record.
Yep.
Is running against Richard Cordray, who used to run the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and because of that has secured the endorsement of Elizabeth Warren,
right.
which gives him some progressive cred.
Yeah.
He's not actually progressive, though. He's definitely the establishment guy. He doesn't support single payer.
Yeah.
And so, in any case, we have sort of like the official kind of war of the Democratic Party
yes.
happening in that primary in Ohio, which is a key state.
Yeah, that's right.
In this regard.
And it will not. They will not be running against John Kasich because he's term limited up.
Right. So,
it's an open
seat.
Race. Right.
But there have been a few polls, only a few polls, and they're not super conclusive. But it sort of looks like it's a tighter race than maybe Cordray thought he would be in against
sure.
Kucinich, who has always
yeah.
seemed like a far
well,
left
Kucinich
wing nut.
Has, right, but he also was the, what was he the mayor of Cleveland or Cincinnati or
it's,
where?
Kucinich
I mean, like, he is a
has
you know,
a track
run,
record
he
locally.
He was in Congress
for zillions
ages
of years
and really only lost that seat to actually another progressive
mm-hmm.
because of some redistricting issues.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not as, you know, people like to sort of, like, think of Dennis Kucinich as a bit of a kook, and look, he is.
The man's UFO sighting.
Right. And
says
which,
that.
Which he told us in a presidential debate.
Yeah.
Also, by the way,
right.
just to tell you,
yeah.
the man is not scared to tell you what he thinks,
no.
and sometimes it's insane.
Right.
So, you know, but he is like he's a person who has name recognition in
yeah.
Ohio. Like, I mean, he's a guy. It's
and
not
he's
as
also
if,
someone
he's not just some sort of like quack that shows up every once in a while to run for something. Like, this
national
is a,
name
this is a
recognition.
Congressperson.
He's someone also who has national name recognition.
Right. I would assume he's probably able to fundraise fairly
yeah.
easily.
If Sanders did anything for anyone,
right.
it's to help a candidate like Kucinich fundraise in a race like this.
Yeah.
And
but there's been some drama though.
There's been some drama. Kucinich has been attacking Cordray on his stance on guns and single payer. Cordray has been attacking him for praising Trump. I think it was one of those praises, though, where he said that Trump had tapped into something that, you know,
probably
like,
some,
you know how
yeah.
progressives are saying, because Trump did
yeah.
that. He was,
he sort of tapped into this populist thing,
right.
effectively. The reason he won, because he tapped into something, and we can debate whether it was white nationalism or what.
Or
but,
populism,
but
it's one of those.
But right, exactly. And Hillary Clinton tapped into exactly nothing.
Right.
So whether you tap into something nefarious or not, saying somebody tapped into something
it's not a...
It's, that's a statement
not a
fact.
Rousing endorsement of Donald Trump. Right, but in any case, exactly, so right. He had made some... Which a lot of progressives did after the race, because right. We had sort of seen a populist movement forming right. And then saw it kind of taken away from us. So, and then he's criticized Obama, which also progressives have done repeatedly, because Obama was not that progressive, you guys. In any case, but the real drama is that Kucinich was taking money from a group that was sympathetic to Assad.
Right, and he's actually been over there.
Yes, so there's some drama...
Right, and
that Kucinich's campaign might be partially funded by the Assad regime.
Yeah, and that...
That is drama. Great, that is drama. Yeah. He said he was going to return all of that money. This happened in late April.
Yeah.
But that is maybe a concerning thing to think about.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, but the election's on Tuesday, so hold on to your hats.
There you go.
Indiana's also voting on Tuesday. We will have some results from those races next week.
Yeah.
But we're getting into, like, real primary season.
Starting. In earnest.
It's starting in earnest. May is a big primary month. A lot of important states are having interesting primaries. There are going to be some exciting primary challengers to some incumbent senators. Yep. Mm-hmm. There's going to be, we're going to find out who's running against some of the more risky senatorial seats. So it's going to be exciting. So hold on to your hats. This is the last week probably where everything will just be drama about Trump.
Right.
In any case, in final news. Melania Trump has decided to finally formally announce her platform as First Lady.
When you told me this, I was like, wait, I thought it was anti-bullying.
Yeah, but it wasn't. She's just been casually saying stuff about bullying,
right.
But she hasn't formally announced any plans to do anything about it other than casually mention she's not for it.
And she's going
to
announce something tomorrow. That's or today, Monday.
Right. And we have some insight into what that's going to be.
Do we, though?
Well, here's what her spokesperson said. As has been evidenced by the many events Mrs. Trump has participated in during her time as First Lady, her focus will be the overall well-being of children. Something unique, though, she has not narrowed her platform down to just one topic, as has been done in the past. Mrs. Trump wishes to help the next generation by creating change through awareness on a variety of issues that affect children. So her platform is...
Kid helping.
kid helping. Her platform is to have a platform.
Yeah.
Basically. She's announcing a platform that is not a platform. Yeah. Like, she's just having an announcement of nothing on Monday.
That's right. She had a listening session. With some with kids at the White House.
With 12 kids recently. Yeah. I would love to know how that went.
Yeah. Oh, same.
I mean, a listening session for kids is at the White House is an interesting thing to have put yourself through.
You know what? Like, she's not going to because she just doesn't care.
No.
But I feel like I feel like Melania could really sort of like throw herself into this first ladiness and have that be what actually is able to give her some joy.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, like, I get it. You didn't want to be the first lady. You wanted to
Didn't want to have to talk
you
to
Donald
Trump.
You wanted to continue having fancy lunches in New York City.
We all did.
And that's
what we wanted for you too.
Right. We get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you could
do something good.
And it would also occupy your time so you don't have to go around with, you know, your asshole husband who's trying to hold your hand all the time.
Like, you could be too busy to be seen with him.
Yes, you could. You absolutely could.
And like, it feels good to
help
people.
I kind of want that for her.
I know. I also feel like she's the only person that could potentially have a not destructive effect in the world. Like, I don't know how positive the effect will be.
Right, sure.
But I feel like she could be not destructive. The rest of them can't be.
That's correct.
Everyone else is being destructive openly. Yeah. She has the opportunity to have it be a wash.
That's right.
Her role in the Trump administration could be a wash.
Right.
And that could be enough, you know?
Right. She could leave with the head held, I don't know.
In the same place it's in.
It's the same place it's always been.
Her head held on her neck. That's right. So, in any case, look out for that exciting announcement.
Yeah.
Finally, glad to have that finally cleared up.
Yeah. If you're really looking for exciting Melania Trump
things,
what you should do is do yourself a favor and watch this last episode of RuPaul's Drag Race because it was the snatch game, which is always the best. It's where they all have to play a character and do the match game, but they call it the snatch game, obviously.
Yeah, it's RuPaul's Drag Race. Idiots.
And the drag queen who won was Melania Trump and was hilarious.
Obviously.
Super hilarious.
She's such a good drag queen character.
I
mean,
I know. And somehow managed to make her far funnier than she could ever make herself.
I don't doubt that.
So, anyway.
All right. Well, that's the news for the week.
There it is.
We'll be back with next week with what I can only imagine is more Giuliani interviews because it seems like he's not slowing down anytime soon.
Oh, quick public service announcement.
Yes.
Watch Bobby Kennedy for President on Netflix.
Brent is...
I mean, look, I love Bobby Kennedy. Right. I always have. like he is sort of like politically. I'm like Bobby right. Kennedy. He's where it's at.
Yeah, he's your spirit animal.
That's right. Yes, mm-hmm. was like I've read a lot about Bobby Kennedy. Like some of my favorite like political books, like The Last Campaign, sure. which is about like specifically like the 80 some days of his campaign. It's like one of my favorite books. I love Bobby Kennedy, and it's really well done, and it's. Good.
Brian keeps texting me at 1:30 in the morning, which is way past his bedtime, well, to tell me about it, which is how I know that he's loving it.
Well, I was sobbing last night.
I believe that.
Like, because it got to the part where you would think to sob. Right. But
like, oh, you don't also, want to spoil it for
well,
them?
Well, no, I know. Yeah, I know. But, like, John Lewis is one of the people that they're interviewing, like, throughout this mm-hmm. documentary, because obviously Bobby Kennedy was, like, super involved in the civil rights, right. you know, issue in the 68, and he was shot not long after, you know, Martin Luther King.
Right. That was a weird time, 1968.
Right, exactly.
A lot of people died.
And John Lewis, sort of, like, when recounting sort of, like, what he was up to the night that he died and found out, I mean, just... breaks, like, truly breaks down. Like, has, like, a... We're talking about John Lewis
right
here.
He's not always... he's not an emotional man.
I mean, weeping on... And I just, like... If you ever need a good cry yourself, then you just cue up...
John
it's in
Lewis.
The last couple minutes of episode 3 of Bobby Kennedy for President, and you just watch John Lewis sob to himself, yeah. and you'll get it out.
Yeah. Just work through all your emotions.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was doing.
Yeah, Brent's been very busy.
That's what I was doing at like 2 a.m.
He has been listening to Slow Burn. He's been watching Bobby Kennedy. He's an expert in all of history at the moment.
That's right. Yeah. I can tell you all about Watergate. I can tell you all about 1968.
And we cannot recommend Slow Burn enough.
So good.
Don't not listen to Slow Burn. Especially as we watch the Trump scandal unfold further. Because there are so many parallels. And also, you get the sense that it feels like we're living in an extraordinary time now. And we are.
Yes.
But you get the sense that people have felt that before.
Yeah.
You know, like that was also an extraordinary time.
It was.
And a time where people didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And a time also where somebody who had very clearly violated the law retained the support of most of America right. for too long.
And the thing about that has been sort of like important for me to remember is that like oftentimes people like when they find out that I sort of like follow the news and do a political podcast, the thing that everyone asks is Trump
right
is Trump gonna go to jail, is Trump gonna get impeached, is Trump gonna whatever
the
form the question takes. And what I always say, yes, I think so. And then the follow-up is always like, why is it taking so long?
Right. And it's not taking that long.
And it's not. And what I sort of I almost said forgot, but I never lived through it, and I guess right. I maybe
you couldn't
didn't,
have known this.
Maybe I couldn't have known, but like you know, yeah, I mean, there were investigations prior to the 72 election, which Richard Nixon
which
won 49 states.
Yeah, exactly.
Swept. It still remains the biggest, despite what Donald Trump says, the biggest landslide
exactly.
in electoral history.
Yeah.
So it took years for that to happen because
Nixon won
74,
all the states
believe,
that you're not
right?
thinking he would win.
That's right.
He won California, he won New York, he won Vermont.
That's right.
I mean... Every state that you're thinking
people
would not
loved
vote for
Richard
a Nixon
after they knew that he was trying to wiretap
the opposition.
Watergate Hotel. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And that he had basically stolen the election.
Right. And there were multiple, you know, committees that sort of like started looking into it.
They had their own
thwarted.
Bernie Sanders
they had
sort
their,
of
right, exactly.
figure.
So like this, we are not so far off track. Yeah. And so if you are a person who is out there and you need to... hear something, some facts
you
in
some
your
hope.
Life that makes you think that maybe we'll finally get there.
Yeah.
Then you should listen
and
to
And reminds
slow
you that the U.S. government works slow. We're not
right.
speedsters. I know it feels like we're going slow, especially because this is like the age of everything being at warp speed.
Yeah.
And like you can communicate with your friends all day on a
but
tiny device in
your
pocket.
You can also only investigate things so fast and you can only talk to people so fast. And
you can only sort of change large scale public sentiment so fast.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And this...
I would say you can change it slower now because I feel like it's just so... people are so entrenched.
But the other thing I think that actually helped me sort of calm down from listening to that was also that they were not just living through an extraordinary time because the president committed a major crime. They were living through an extraordinary time because socially everything was changing really fast. And part of what created this sort of knee-jerk response where people loved Nixon... was that he was the sort of candidate of conservatism in a way that made people feel like it's going to slow down. And right. that's what's happening right now. That's oh, partly yeah, what sure. the Trump thing is about. We know that's part of what the Trump thing is about. It's people who don't sort of understand what America yes, exactly. is right now.
Yes, panicking. He was the sort of like the candidate that gave
that was like,
people comfort.
Right, in, don't worry. You'll way. Get to live in right. your white town with, right, exactly. without anyone
We're
else
We're going
forever.
To have law and order.
Exactly.
I mean, so many parallels even between
the language. The right, language, yeah, exactly, yeah. No, exactly. And so the other thing that it's not comforting necessarily to know that this is a thing that we keep repeating, but that there have been other times where people who where sort of conservative mentalities, you know, conservative people panicked and set us back a few, you right. know, like yes. that this is part of the process.
Yes, as
part
Carla
of the process
say,
of change. Nothing can't be undone.
There it is. Carla Nordstrom.
That's right. We quote that quote. She once was like, did I say that to me? And I was like, we talk have. About it all the time. Yeah. You must have.
You did now.
I mean, she literally did. I remember okay. her saying it, but then she forgot.
But if even if she didn't, she officially has now.
Exactly. But yeah, that's something that another similarity between the Watergate era and this era is that there was social progress happening
yeah.
that people.
And social angst.
And social angst too. Because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of the same things that went into this crisis.
Yeah.
But so anyway, we can't recommend that podcast enough, clearly.
Yeah.
We could have a whole podcast about that podcast.
That's right.
That would be a little meta.
Really meta.
But whatever.
Yeah, I'm also listening to Dirty John, by the way, too, which is a true crime podcast, which has nothing to do with anything.
But it's
like,
fun.
Just in terms of
recommending
media,
podcasts.
Media that I am consuming this week. It's yeah. really been an all-time high.
Yeah, Bren has been in it this week.
Going for it.
He's going for it.
Yeah.
Right. But we'll be back next week.
Yep.
If you want to chat with us offline about
any
slow
of those
burn
things, right?
Feel free to email us or whatever.
Yep.
We'll write you back an extensively long email. We're not
that's right. We have thoughts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we'll talk to you next week.
All
bye.
Right.